Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
We know why you've come. I want to thank you so much for coming tonight. Thank you so much for your support of independent bookstores. It's because of your support that we can bring great authors to you, and we really appreciate that. It is a great pleasure to introduce the bloggess, Jenny Lawson.
Shit, there's a lot of you. I should have started my disclaimer first by saying that I'm going to curse. I've completely forgotten everything that I was going to say because you guys kind of blew me away, and also I need to be shorter so you can hear me. I don't know how to make this podium taller because I don't know how to make wood grow. I'll just lean down and give you cleavage. Thank you. That's probably great. Or awful. Who knows? So first of all, thank you so much for coming out to Tattered Cover. And you guys are so lucky to have this bookstore because I want to come here all the time and we don't have this store in Texas. So first of all, thank you for coming out. Secondly, thank you because we just heard that the book is still 14 weeks in, still on the New York Times list. And that is entirely because of you guys. I think it came as a big surprise to pretty much everyone that the book came the first week it opened at number one, and it came as a huge surprise to me personally. I thought I was in a coma, and I told everyone that they should go home and have sex with strangers and eat a lot of cheesecake because they were all figments of my imagination. And I'm still in a coma. Yay for comas. But what was so great is people kept asking, like, well, why did it hit number one so quick? Like, what in the world? And I'm like, it had this groundswell of support, this underground support from wonderful people, and you guys are the wonderful people. So thank you. And not only thank you for that, but also thank you because there are so many people who have found the book and have now kind of found this tribe of wonderful people because it got noticed and recognized. And so our group of awesome intellectual misfits continues to grow. So it's a good thing. Let's see. So we're going to start with a reading, and it would be helpful if I had a book, and I think I have. Well, I do have one. Okay. So if you've read the book, you know that I have severe anxiety disorder. So I do. Yeah, like half the people in this room are like, me too. Yeah. I think we're all on the same drugs. Actually, tonight it's propranolol because I wanted to mix it up a little. I've done a little too much of the Xanax. So yeah, but I took one and it wasn't working, so I took two, and it's working too well, I think. So I'm really, really hoping that I'm going to get through this and that it's going to really go great and that I'm not going to pass out. And normally I wear like really long dresses. And that way, if I pass out, I don't have to worry about flashing anyone. So if I pass out and fall off the stage, please don't take pictures of my underwear. That's my only request for the night. Okay, so I'm going to start with a disclaimer, which I should have started with way before. which is actually in the book, but I think is good because this is the first time ever, I have to say, that someone has not put me in the kids section. I shit you not. Every single time, I'm in the kids section. One time I was in the mental health section. This is the only time I've actually like been in a place where there weren't like children running around, and I'm like, I'm about to say fuck a lot. Sorry. So, I apologize in advance for offending you, because you're going to get halfway through this book and giggle at non sequiturs about Hitler and abortion and poverty, and you'll feel superior to all the uptight, easily offended people who need to learn how to take a fucking joke. But somewhere in here, you will hear one random thing that you are sensitive about, and everyone else will think it's hysterical, but you will think, oh, that is way over the line. I apologize for that one thing. Honestly, I don't know what I was thinking. Okay, so I'm going to read from one of my favorite chapters to read from because I get to scream really inappropriate things, and it's even better when I don't really know where we are in the building, but I'd like to think we're close enough to random strangers that they'll hear this stuff just randomly screamed down the hall. And it's going to make it so much better. I'm going to be reading from The Psychopath on the Other Side of the Bathroom Door. All right. You guys are awesome. I haven't even started. I got claps. All right. 3 pounds, exactly. A few weeks ago, my friend Lotta told me that her doctor told her that her antidepressants weren't working because she had too many toxins in her body and that she needed to use a colon cleanse to flush everything out of her system. It sounded completely insane, and I told her that, but then she mentioned that she took the colon cleanse and lost 3 pounds that very day, and I was immediately in. I convinced myself that I owed it to my family to have my crazy pills work properly, but really I just wanted to lose 3 pounds without working out. And that whole lesson, it kind of proves why I need to be on crazy pills. So I went to the grocery store, but I couldn't find the colon cleanse, and I considered asking the pharmacist, but as I was waiting in line, I had a conversation in my head that went a little something like this. Yes, I'd like some colon cleanse. I've never heard of that, said the pharmacist in my head. Sounds like something deviants use. No, it's something that cleans out your colon so that your antidepressants work better. I think you're using your antidepressants wrong. They go in your mouth. You are surprisingly unhelpful for a healthcare worker. I'm calling the police, you deviant. And I'm not sure why I jumped right to the pharmacist calling the police, but once the thought was in my head, it was stuck there, and so I panicked a little when the pharmacist asked what I actually needed. I paused awkwardly and then asked where the reading glasses were, because he said they didn't carry reading glasses, which was weird because most pharmacies do, and I always like to try them on and pretend I'm a naughty librarian. So, yeah, right? So instead of the colon cleanse, I decided that I would just take a bunch of X-Lax because I figured next best thing, right? I bought the extra strength stuff because it was the same price as the regular strength, and so technically it was like I was saving money. And I thought that would help my argument when my husband Victor demanded to know why I had bought $20 worth of unnecessary laxatives. Although later it turned out that he really didn't care so much about cost effectiveness because he hates being economically feasible or just wants to see me fat or something. I already knew that he'd be all judgy about the whole thing because he was also very unsupportive when I wanted to buy those Chinese foot pad things that suck all the toxins out of your feet while you sleep. He claimed the whole Chinese foot pad thing was a scam, but I think it's just because he wants me to suffer or possibly because he's racist. And then when I called him racist, he got all mad and screamy, and I was like, I don't even know what I'm saying. Those are the toxins talking. But he still wouldn't let me buy them. And this is exactly why I waited until the week that he left for a business trip to New York to actually do the cleanse. I took 2 chocolate squares of X-Lax that night, but then I noticed that the directions said that it would bring, quote, gentle results. And it seemed like a good colon cleansing shouldn't be gentle at all. So I took 3 more tabs. And they were chocolatey and delicious, and I was kind of hungry, so I ate another one. And then, nothing happened at all. which was weird. So the next morning, I took two more, because at this point, I thought maybe there was something wrong with me, and I had some kind of freakishly high laxative intolerance. And then I went to Starbucks and picked up a giant Frappuccino. Yeah, see, you guys get it. I didn't. I had no clue. No one ever told me that coffee is a laxative. It is. Coffee is a laxative. I know this now. So I drove back to my home drinking my Frappuccino, and then my intestines exploded. I mean, they didn't literally explode, but it totally felt that way. And at first I was all, okay, pain is good, feel the burn. But then I realized that this was not like yoga, and that I had, in fact, made a horrible, horrible mistake. I'm not going to get graphic, but it basically felt like my legs had melted and an elephant had crawled inside my stomach and was clawing his way out. And the elephant had claws, apparently. And his nose was made of snakes. Since Victor was in New York and my daughter Haley was in school, I had the house to myself, which was good, because honestly, there would have been no way to maintain the sensual mystery of womanhood had anyone heard the noises coming from that bathroom. Point, I started worrying that I might be ODing. I wasn't sure what ODing on laxatives looked like, but I was fairly certain that it would be messy and that you would probably shit out your entire colon. I'm not even sure if this is actually medically possible. And I thought about calling Lotta to ask her whether she felt like she was shitting out her colon when she did her cleanse, but I wasn't sure that I could talk without screaming. And so I sat there, thinking that this would be a horrible way to die, because basically no matter what I had accomplished in my life, it would always be overshadowed by, and then she died on the toilet from pooping out her lower intestine. Like if it had happened to Thomas Edison, that would totally be the first thing that it would say in his Wikipedia entry. It'd be all, Thomas Edison, who pooped out his own colon, made a variety of inventions and changed the way we live today. Did we mention he pooped out his own colon? Because he totally did. Thomas Edison pooped out his own colon. Honestly, we can't stress this enough. It was about this time that I thought I needed to take action, and so I found some Pepto-Bismol, and I took a full dose. I considered taking more, but at this point, I was concerned I might have to call 911 for help. And I didn't want to have to explain why I had taken three times the recommended amount of laxatives and three times the recommended amount of anti-diarrhea medicine. Because even to me, that sounded like some sort of poorly planned suicide attempt. Taking just one dose of the anti-diarrheal seemed somewhat rational comparatively. Surely, I thought to myself, this will make me seem more credible and less likely to be put on suicide watch. Of course, the Pepto-Bismol was no match for the raw power of the X-Lax, and it was much like wearing shin guards in the middle of a tornado, except even less effective. Because at least with shin guards, when they found your body later, you could still wear a skirt in your coffin, unless your legs got ripped off entirely, which could totally happen. But the Pepto-Bismol didn't do anything at all except turn my tongue black. Interesting side note here. When I wrote this, I thought that everyone, when they ate Pepto-Bismol, that it turns their tongue black. Turns out it's just like 1 in 6 people. So like 5/6 of the people that read this book are like, what the fuck is she talking about? And the other 1/6 are like, yeah, me too. So if your tongue turns black, you're part of the special chosen fruit. And the reason why I know this is because Pepto-Bismol contacted me. They were not pleased. It crossed my mind that maybe eating a bunch of cheese might help. It's homeopathic. Because I once went to school with a girl who ate too much cheese and got so constipated she had to go to the hospital to get the poop removed by a doctor. And after I heard that, I could never quite look at her in the same way, and I often wondered whether she got to keep the poop they removed, like when you get to keep your tonsils. And then I remembered that I didn't even have any cheese in the house, and that even if I did, it didn't matter because I couldn't leave the toilet long enough to get it. And that is when I heard the noise at the bathroom door. It sounded like someone leaning against the door and tapping it lightly. Oh, it sounded just like that, actually. That never works in real life. In real life, I'm always like, I'm tapping and nothing's happening. And I'm like, I just tapped. Never mind. Let's see. And tapping it lightly with his knuckles, and I was all, oh my God, I didn't lock the bathroom door. And then I thought, wait, why would I even need to lock the bathroom door since I'm the only one home? My initial thought was that it was a murderer or a rapist, which was quickly followed up by the thought that if it was a rapist, he was going to be terribly disappointed. heard the possible rapist again, and so I coughed because I thought it might be a burglar who just didn't realize I was at home. I hoped that the coughing would give him the hint that he needed to leave, although technically the other noises coming from that bathroom were probably much more intimidating. But I was trying to be polite because I'm a lady. And then, someone slid a note under the door. And I just stared at it because seriously, what the fuck? It was so baffling I couldn't even get scared. I tried to slide my foot over to reach the note, which was a small white slip of paper, but I couldn't reach it. And so I just yelled weakly, "Hello? Did you just pass me a note?" But no one answered. And then I started to get freaked out, and I silently thanked God that I had thought to bring the phone into the bathroom, just in case I needed a call to report the laxative overdose. I picked up the phone to call the police, and then considered how it would sound when I told them I was calling from inside my bathroom, where I had OD'd on laxatives, and that a possible rapist was quietly passing me notes under the bathroom door. And then I thought it would be really weird if the note said something like, "Do you like me, circle yes or no?" And I probably would have laughed, too, if it wasn't for the laxative rapist combo bearing down on me. And then another note came slowly peeking from under the door, and I realized that this time it wasn't a note at all. It was actually the wrapper from a Band-Aid. And that's when I realized that I was probably dealing with a psychopath, because why would anyone send me a Band-Aid wrapper unless they were completely fucking insane? And so I yelled, "I'm calling the police! And I have diarrhea!" Because I thought that would discourage a rapist. I really am so excited to like go outside and see if anybody's like walking past it. Like, "You guys, she has diarrhea. I don't know. Something bad, that the police have to come. That's how bad it is." Then it got really quiet. And suddenly the Band-Aid wrapper was violently pulled back from under the door, and I was all, "What the hell?" And then it shot back in the bathroom door again. But this time I could see that it was being pushed under the door by a fucking cat paw. And that's when I realized that the cat had knocked over my purse and was just shoving receipts and assorted purse flotsam under the door. Then I murdered my cat, but only in my mind. It occurred to me that I should write this all down because it was a funny story, and I didn't have anything to write on except for the paper that the cat had pushed under the door. And so I yelled, "Posey, push the paper further!" But he didn't because he's an asshole. And also he's a cat, so he doesn't speak English. So instead I wrote this all on toilet paper with lipstick, but just the keywords and not the entire thing, because that would be crazy. And then I said a little prayer, thanking God for saving me from being assaulted, and also for not making me have to explain to the ambulance drivers that I had accidentally mistaken my cat for a rapist after purposely overdosing on laxatives in order to make my antidepressants work better. Mainly because that's the kind of story that gets told over and over again to the new ambulance crew recruits. But then I remembered that girl from high school who had to have the poop bubble removed, and so in comparison, I thought maybe my story wasn't so weird after all. Except when Victor came home, I told him about it, because how could you not share that story? And he got all testy about the laxatives, and implied that I, quote, couldn't be trusted in the house unsupervised. And I'm all, glass half full, asshole, I didn't get raped, right? And he shouted back, "You were never in danger of being raped." But I think he just said that to hurt my feelings. And so I retorted, "Oh, I am always in danger of being raped, thank you very much." And he was all, "I'm not questioning your rape ability. I'm just saying I can't go away for 2 days without you ODing on laxatives." And that's when I made a mental note that I would never tell him about ODing on anything. And also that I should probably make friends with ambulance drivers, because I bet they have some pretty kick-ass stories. Oh my gosh, got through it. Oh, hardest part of the day is over. It's all downhill from now. Okay, so now we get to do the super ultra fun Q&A. Unless no one has questions, in which case I'll just make shit up. So raise your hand if you have a question. I will make shit up. Oh, there we go. There's a question. Of course I will be your friend. Yes. Will you braid my hair? Okay. Friends forever. Yeah, no, I want like a fishbone sideways. I want something you see on Pinterest where you'd be like, wow, what's that thing? Yes.
Can I see what stuffed animals you got in your purse?
I'm so transparent. I do not have any taxidermied animals with me because Hamlet von Schnitzel, he's traveled with me before on tour and broke both of his legs. He took the whole break a leg thing very seriously. He's nothing if not efficient. And then I brought Juanita and she broke a paw. And so finally I was like, who can I bring that won't get broken? And I thought, Copernicus. Copernicus, the homicidal monkey. Yeah. And what's really awesome is people always come up and they're like, oh, he's even creepier in real life. And he totally is. And so I've been on the road for a week now and I have another week to go. And I was having it was super homesick. And I called home. And so Victor was like, okay, we can come down and meet you for dinner and I'll bring Haley. And I was like, right, that's awesome. So they came down last night and we're in the one bed of the hotel because I haven't planned for any of this, you know. And all of a sudden, Haley looks up, and I had Kurt Copernicus laying on the side. And she was like, oh, "The monkey followed us." I was like, "No, he's been packed away." And she was like, oh, "Okay, can you put him back in your suitcase?" I was like, "Yeah, I can." Next question. Yes.
So this is actually a very specific question.
Okay.
You're so hilarious, and I weep because I know I'll never be as witty as you.
Aww,
but
thank you.
Where do you attribute your wittiness and your amazing writing and your improv abilities as you write? I'm guessing.
That is a great question. I'm going to repeat it because this is podcasted, not just because I'd like to hear, you know, compliments over and over again. basically, he said, where do I attribute my wittiness? And I don't really feel like I have a whole lot of wittiness. I just think I'm really good at sharing stories. And I think I'm really good at picking out the weirdest stories. I will say that, first of all, my family is really, really funny and awesome. And so I'm really lucky in that way. And as a matter of fact, my sister, if I died, she could probably take over the blog and nobody would know the difference. So that's helpful. Except she has a litter of children, so she can't do it. Because I've asked her. I was like, just fill in for me once or twice. And she was like, I have 23 children. It was not really 23, but it's like that. But I will say that one of the advice that I give out the most is I think Shakespeare said brevity is the soul of wit, and that is so totally true. When I write something, I immediately cut it in half because you always are going to have this extra stuff. And sometimes, you know, you're like, oh, I don't want to cut it because there's this one sentence here that's really funny, but you have to read two paragraphs to get to that one funny sentence, and it's not worth it to your readers because you're going to lose them in those two paragraphs. So I think learning the art of editing myself has been really, really helpful. Yes. Good question. What is my plan to tell Haley once she's old enough to Google all this? Well, first of all, I plan on saying, this book is going to pay for your college. That's it. This whole thing's going into her college fund. So that would be part of it. I'm also very, very, there are only two things that I don't write about. One is I don't write about anything that I think could be used against Haley when she's in that weird, awkward 12-year-old stage and there's bullies around. So I try never to write anything about her that I think could be used against her. And I never write about anything that Victor and I are currently fighting about. We have to have yeah. Which is why it's kind of funny, the Beyonce story, when it came out, it was little Beyonce! Little metal have chickens. I love it. When the Beyonce story came out, I had no idea that it would become this big viral menace that it became. It like crashed my entire system and took down all the servers. And it happened, and Victor was really mad at me for a long time. And people always ask, like, but you weren't really mad. And he's like, no, I was really mad. Like, so I didn't write about it. I mean, I wrote about it, but I didn't post it for, like, 2 weeks until he was actually finally able to sort of laugh about it and be like, all right, it was kind of funny, whatever. But by then, I had, like, almost forgotten that I'd written it, and I was just like, oh, we're going on vacation, and so I'll just post it, and I'll just, like, leave it up, and, like, just on the flight over, all of a sudden, it, like, went completely crazy. And so, that was an interesting one. I think I just sort of rambled there. Let's get back to the questions. In the back. Excellent questions. First off, Hunter S. Tomcat is doing excellent. I was very sad that they did not bring him over. He's got some problems, but he's going to be fine. But he has, like, the vet says he has some sort of, like, water on the brain sort of thing. And so he's perpetually drunk. And it really, it's I can never remember what it's called. But he just can't stand up straight. And he's like, but he's so adorable. And he'll start to walk and then he'll just fall over and I'll, like, pick him back up. And he'll live forever. I mean, the doctor was like, no, he's fine. He just is going to be drunk all the time, but he's fine. He's like me. But it's kind of funny because lately he's come up and he'll get on the bed and he'll, like, crawl up and he'll, like, get his face, like, right up into my face and he'll put his mouth on my mouth and I'll open up my eyes and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? There's a cat trying to date rape me. Like, what's going on? Yeah, and he's just like, and I'm like, it's so creepy. So I guess that's my answer, is he's good and creepy. And the other question was, how did my family take the book? Before it actually ever got into to the publisher's hands, every person who was in the book got to look at it. So my sister, my parents, my in-laws, my husband, everybody who played a major role, and I basically said, if there's anything that you feel uncomfortable with, I will pull out, or if there's anything that you don't remember in the same way, I'll change, or, you know, whatever you want. And to their great credit, not a single person asked me to change anything. And instead, what they said was, I see that you wrote about, you know, Rambo the raccoon and his little shorts. We have pictures of that if you need that. And I was like, yes, I need pictures of that. They're like, and we have, you know, your father's Armadillo State Racing Championship ring. I was like, yeah, yes, keep them coming. All the crazy pictures, which was great because at a certain point, my editor was like, I don't know that we can include some of these chapters because they are so unbelievable. And I'm like, but that's what makes them so great, is that they happened. And then we had the picture. She was like, okay, green, we go. Yes, we go with this. Next question. Yes. The question was, now that me and Will Wheaton are besties, am I ever going to do a knock knock motherfucker to him? And actually, it's funny that you should mention that, because I went to his house once because I had to do the book preview, and so he was the only one that I had to actually, like, go in person. Everybody else, I was like, can you please just do a little video? And they nicely did it. Everybody was super nice. But with his, I had to actually go over to his house, and he was like, let's go for a walk. And I'm like, all right. So it's like me, my husband, Will Wheaton, his wife, like this big, like, group of us. And he's like, we need to walk like 29 blocks. So I'm like, okay, awesome. We could have taken cars, but whatever. Apparently they don't do that in California. And we get like 29 blocks, and all of a sudden there's this giant metal chicken and somebody's, and he was like, knock, knock, motherfucker. I've been waiting for you forever. So yeah, so he got me first. So now I'm like, oh, how do I pay it forward? I need to do so. I need to have a horse made of twine or something, like a Trojan horse of twine would be awesome. Yes. Nathan Fillion has acknowledged me. He has acknowledged how completely insane I am, and how much he would prefer that we not ever discuss him again. And I think that is a fair... That is a fair thing to ask. And so from now on, we will no longer ask Nathan Fillion for anything Twine related because he apparently has a big phobia or something. And so instead I say we focus on Neil Patrick Harris. No, we focus on no one. Although Neil Patrick Harris totally would do it. You know he would if we asked him, but we won't. No more Twine. We're not asking. Next question. Yes. That's a really good question. I think it has in many ways helped the book coming out and becoming very successful simply because I think it's not only has it given me this feeling that I can have a voice and that people are listening to my voice, but I think it's given so many other people a voice. And it's so interesting seeing how many other people like come up and they say, oh, I've decided to write a book and I've decided, and like suddenly everybody finds these, because everybody has a story inside of them. And so I think that's been kind of amazing. On the family side, my parents are incredibly shocked and don't understand it at all. And they're just like, it's a very sweet book, Jenny, but it's just not funny. And it's not to them because they lived it. That's, you know, that's life. But I think the turning point was when I was on CNN and I said Lady Garden and my grandmother called to tell me how proud she was of me. I was like, oh, Granny, she's awesome. Yes. Good question. So the question was, did I always want to write a book, and or is this the only book, or do I think that I'll be more prolific than that? I hope that I'll be more prolific. Because two books sounds nice. I envy people like Neil Gaiman and Stephen King who like get on a plane and then when they land, they've got a new book. This took me 11 years to write. And so it is something that I've always wanted to do. I always write. Always, whether it be poetry, I write fiction, I write nonfiction, but the stuff that I share is typically just like my family life sort of stuff. I actually just finished the proposal for book two and submitted it, so hopefully within the next couple of years we'll have a second book. The question is Victor for real? And no, he's actually Nathan Fillion. Yeah, we have been carrying on a torrid affair for quite some time, and he is disgusted with me. So last night when Victor and Haley came in, we met two of my friends who I'd only, you know, kind of met online, and they showed up, and they were like, how much of this is real, though? I mean, you're not really... And he was like, no, that really is me. And I really am pissed, and I really wish that she would stop writing all the shit. But at the same time, he's really very supportive in the abstract. It's just when I actually start to share real stories, and he's like, you know what? I was just on a conference call, and everybody just asked me why you have a fucking Pegasus in the living room. Like, because it's awesome. Everyone wants a Pegasus in their living room. It's badass. Yes, in the very back. Okay, I think you just said something about tomatoes and... I didn't hear the first part at all, so I'm going to pretend... Boobs! I love boobs! I'm a big fan! I'm a big fan! Signing them! Oh! No, I get it. I'm a big fan of signing them too. I have signed a lot of boobs. I have signed a lot of babies. Yeah. I've signed 3 dogs. One of them was dead. Day before yesterday, I signed an unborn baby, and not like a fetus, because that would be gross. But like, this woman was like, she was like, I'm about to go into labor tomorrow. I'm going to have a baby. Would you sign my stomach? And I was like, sure. And as I started to sign it, like a foot came out. And I was like, it was like alien. It was creepy. I was like, I know I had a baby, but it's still gross. Yes. Advice that I would give to aspiring bloggers, writers, I would say, first of all, find your voice, because that's what's going to set you apart. I would say write for yourself, because you will never be bored if you're writing something that entertains you. When I first started, I had 2 readers, and one of them was the girl in the other cubicle, and I would just be like, Christine, comment on my blog. But I continued to do it for years and years until it finally like found its community and found its voice, because I was writing for myself. And the same thing for this book. I mean, obviously taking 11 years to write a book, that's definitely a passion play is what that is, I guess. I would also say, and this is the best advice that I ever got from anyone, and it was from Neil Gaiman, in fact, and I was doing the audiobook of, is Neil Gaiman here? he might be here. I was doing the audiobook, and when I was doing the audiobook, I was terrified, and you could hear it in my voice. And I had to keep doing it over and over and over again, and he's done his audiobook before, and so I DM'd him, and I was like, I can't do this. What am I doing wrong? Like, how do you do this? How do you do this and not? Like, they can hear my stomach growling. I think they can hear my, like, voices in my head. They hear everything. I am terrified. And he said, pretend you're good at it. And it seems like such a simple thing, and I went back in, and I was like, I can totally do this, and I totally did it. And every time before I come out, I actually say to myself, before I come out, I say, just pretend you're good at it. And it's the same thing if I have something, if I've written something and I feel kind of iffy on it, I'm like, just pretend it's good. Pretend it's good and just put it out there, and the universe will tell you if it's good or not. Yes. It is astounding. The question was, is it ever astounding all the lives that that I've touched, and specifically the response of like Matthew Broderick and Brian Boitano and like all of these famous people who we didn't realize were reading the book and reading the blog until suddenly Nathan Fillion didn't want to hold Twine, and then they were like, we'll take over. Here's a spatula. And I'm like, awesome, whatever. I think that's wonderful. And it really totally made my day, because I have to say I was a little bummed. But Nathan didn't acknowledge me. But the thing that has been so much more rewarding are how many people who have come and have said, because you talked about mental illness, I went and read the comment section. And if you look at, whenever I write about anxiety disorder or my depression or things like that, whenever I write about it, the community comes out in droves to say, you're not alone, I have the same thing, I'm struggling with it, I'm trying to find the right medication, and they have all these great stories. And I have so many people who have come to me and have said that they decided not to commit suicide, not because of what I had written, but because of what the community, how they had responded. And I think it's so amazing to be part of that community. And I'm so incredibly lucky and blessed to be part of that community. I actually had somebody, I was in Phoenix day before yesterday, I think. I was in a monsoon. It was called a haboob, actually, is what they told me once I got there. I was like, that's not a real word. You guys are just, like, fucking with me. And then CNN was like, in Phoenix, the largest haboob. And I was like, oh, it's a real word. Who knew? But they, there was a woman that came up, and she had, like, her oxygen thing, and she had the mask on, and she was with her husband, and she was about my age, and her husband said, you know, I actually have seen you before, and I got an autographed copy of your book once before, and I gave it to my wife, who at the time was in ICU, waiting for a lung transplant. And she got her lung transplant, and I gave her the book, and the first time she ever laughed was at your book. And that was just like, I had chills, and I was like, okay, you can have free books forever. So those really are the stories that I think are so much more important than any other way that you get compensated for the book. So any other questions? Yes. It is difficult, but what I've learned is, well, there's been a couple of things. First of all, I did a lot of behavioral therapy beforehand, which was really helpful. I also, when I saw my psychiatrist right before I went on the road, I was like, I still don't think I can do it. I don't think I can go out in front of people. This is going to be terrifying. And she was like, you know what? I'm going to give you this drug. It's a performance drug. Rock stars use it before they go out on stage. It's awesome. And I was like, you're going to give me cocaine? That's awesome. I've never even seen it in real life. I can't wait. Yes, let's see it. Pull it out. And she was like, no, it's a beta blocker. And but it ends in LOL, which I thought was like a good sign. The thing I think that I've learned the most, though, is to have the ability to say no. What I really want to do is I get into towns like this, and I'm like, oh, I want to go, and I want to meet people, and I want to go out, and I want to go shopping, and I want to do this and that. And instead, what I do is I sleep, and I hide in my room, and I just don't leave. And I just watch Twitter, and I'm like, oh, people are coming to my book signing, but I can't talk to them on Twitter because I'm too afraid because I haven't taken my drugs yet. And I realize that's completely insane. But what is incredibly helpful is knowing that if I came out here and said, I need 5 minutes, and then like ducked behind this podium and just hid inside there, that you guys would just talk amongst yourselves, you know? And I think that has been one of the best and most wonderful things, is this freeing feeling of everybody's got everybody else's back. And that you know, you could turn to somebody else and be like, do you have any Xanax? And the person would either say absolutely, or they would say no, but I bet the person next to me does. Exactly. Yeah, I've got some in my purse right now. Exactly. She's gonna hand it out. Yes. Oh, that is a really great question. Okay, so the question was, is there anything that I've ever written that I regretted and wish that I could take back? There was one time that I wrote this post about Disney, and it was just a ridiculous post, and it was stuff like, everything here is shaped like Mickey Mouse's head, I'm afraid to ask for a tampon. Like, I mean, it was just like, it was just a bunch of ridiculous stuff. But there was one thing in there, and I can't even remember how it's phrased, and I'm not going to even paraphrase it because it won't sound funny, but it was something that was, like, mildly offensive, and a couple of my, like, in-real-life friends read it, and they were like, that's kind of over the line. And I think it was about, you know what, it was something about kids with cancer. And it was like, and, you know, it was one of those, like, jokes that I was like, can I make a joke about kids with cancer? I think I can. And I did. And everybody laughed except for my friend Tanis, whose kid has cancer. And she was like, that was a little over the line. And I was like, do you want me to take it down? Because I totally will take it down. And she was like, you know what? No, it's funny. It's funny and it's healing. Don't take it down. But since she came out and said that, I have this rule on my blog that I never want to say anything that's going to hurt somebody, and it was something I just never intentionally thought might, you know, cause some pain. And so I put a little thing at the bottom of that post that said, for this time only, this one and only time, if you have a problem with this post, anybody can say it, even anonymously, and I will take down that. I'll take down that whole section. And what was amazing is how many people came out of the woodworks to say, I have a kid with cancer, and that's fucking funny, and that's awesome. And this is exactly what we need, is we need to be able to laugh about this stuff, because that's how you find this healing process. And then about like a, you know, 1,000 comments in, some anonymous person that had commented for the first time ever just said, you know, I don't know anybody with cancer, but I just don't think it's funny, and so you should take it down. So I was like, okay. So I took it down, and everybody was so mad at me. And it was all of the people that at first were like, I don't know, I've got a kid with cancer, I'm not sure this is, and they were the ones that were like, no, stand up for yourself. And I was like, no, I gave my word, and I took it down, but I decided then and there that I would stand behind everything that I wrote after that, that I wouldn't take it down, but that I would always give it a second look with new eyes, not just my eyes, but with new eyes of like, what if I was this, and it usually doesn't stop me from writing something horribly offensive. I mean, it really doesn't, if you've read my blog. But for the most part, the person I'm making fun of the most is me, so it's usually fine. Nobody cares.
One last question.
All right, one last question. Yes. So much. What I would like to say in response to that, and this is being podcasted, so I'll just say that was just a really nice comment about depression and mental illness, and everything that you just said, I could say right back. Because without the fact that there are so many people out there saying, we've got your back, we know how it feels, it is so wonderful to when I'm just about to have a panic attack and I'm completely alone and I have absolutely no one at all and I'm in a hotel room, I know I can go on Twitter and be like, somebody talk me down, and then 1,000 people will say, it's going to be okay, depression lies, you're fine, everything's good. I really, whenever people say thank you, I always want to say thank you right back, because I get just as much out of it as anybody else. So I'm just a member of the community. So thank you guys so much. I think we're ready for the signing part.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.